At Operation Grow Without Cancer, we believe every journey deserves hope, truth, and freedom of choice. In a world clouded by conventional wisdom, we're shining a light on natural health strategies long kept in the shadows. Together, we can embrace healing, share knowledge, and move toward a future free from cancer. Welcome to Hidden Healings Uncensored. We're on today with my good friend. We've become better friends each time we talk, Dr. Michael Karlfeldt. Thank you for being here, Dr. Michael. It was great running into you at the A4M Longevity Fest and the premiere of Biohack Yourself. So introduce yourself to my audience, because many people may be the first time they've ever seen you. So tell me about Dr. Michael Karlfeldt and what you're all about.
Well, thank you, John, and yeah, it's so great to connect each time when we run into each other, and we always have amazing discussions and things learn and grow every time. So I really appreciate that. I'm a naturopathic, for everyone out there, I'm a naturopathic doctor. I've been in clinical practice since 1987. Hundreds of thousands of patient interactions and I run a very busy integrative center here, health center in Boise, Idaho.
One of my favorite places.
For anyone that doesn't know Boise, please don't learn, because there's so many people that are moving here.
move back to California.
Yeah, exactly. We'll have Border Patrol. Hiking here is beautiful, river's beautiful, skiing, all of that. It's just amazing country, and people are amazing. So in my journey, starting as a naturopath, I realized how little care a lot of cancer patients are getting and how little options that they have available. And that then became my strong passion. And it was also fueled by my father passing away from colon cancer. And so that is, and just seeing, his choice was to go the traditional route, and just seeing a big germ and just wilt away, under that care, recognizing that, yes, maybe those are the only tools that they have available, but it's not, they aren't the only tools that are available. And that's why, I know, John, you do this. I have my integrative cancer podcast and written a book, A Better Way to Treat Cancer. Have patients flying in from all over the world, for the kind of unique therapies that we offer here at the center. And I know we'll talk a little bit more about that. But I love education and love empowerment and love choices for people, tools that are effective.
Yeah, that's it's obvious, and I'm, like I said, I look up to you and consider you a friend, and we're in this locking arms battle together, and it's a great time. But go ahead and tell me from your perspective, why do people develop cancer?
And I mean, cancer is really becoming a pandemic now. I mean, it's almost at the rate it's going, it's almost going to be heart disease, and it's actually the number one killer in a lot of countries, European countries. So it is something that we really need to understand and focus on. And obviously the best cancer to get is the one that you never get. I mean, that's the one.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So cancer, in my mind, I mean, there's so many more stressors that we're dealing with nowadays, and our human physiology, it takes a while for it to adapt to new situations and new chemicals and new kind of frequencies. And here within the last century, I mean, it's just exploded the artificial, substances that we are exposed to that, our bodies have no clue what it is, so it is obviously going to then start to create a huge amount of dysregulation in the body. So just the 5Gs we're dealing with, I mean, we have, I'm sure there's like 100,000 different chemicals that are just out and that we're exposed to. We see, food are being genetically modified. So not only are we exposed to more toxins and more stressful you know, frequencies, you know, from all the EMF and microwaves and, you know, cell towers, 5G. But also our food is so much more depleted than it used to be. So we have less ability to fight a bigger stressor. And I think that is what's really driving a lot of the cancer processes. It's essentially too much stress and too little nutrition. And then the cells can't function at that state. So now we got to shift over to a different way of functioning. And then it's more of a kind of a primal programming within the cell, you know, that can then function without oxygen and start to replicate fast, you know, just for as a survival mechanism.
Absolutely. And I couldn't agree more. So it's a very succinct way of putting that. So what are your current best ways of addressing it? I know each patient is different. We all know that. But what's your kind of starting point for someone that comes to you for the first time, whatever they are? What's your best ways of addressing it?
Yeah, and each person is so unique. So a lot of patients that think, well, yeah, I have colon cancer. That person has colon cancer. So whatever that person did should help me. And there's a little truth to that. But each individual is so unique. You know, what drove one individual's cancer is quite different from what drove another person. So there needs to be a lot of investigation and understanding, you know, why did the cancer come there, you know, from the get-go? What are the root causes? You know, a lot of people, it's a combination. So it's a little bit of a soup of things. Yeah. You know? So I look upon cancer, it's kind of like you have the bucket effect. You know, how much stress can you handle before the bucket starts to flow over? You know, so some people can handle a lot of stress and some other people can't handle a lot at all. So it's that level is different for different people. And frequently it is, like I mentioned, a combination. It can be the emotional aspect always is a driver. It doesn't matter if you have a kind of tough gentleman sitting in front of you, you know, that never said a word about emotions in his life. Emotion's going to be there. It's going to be driving that cancer process. So it's really important to unveil that. And then you got to look at, you know, what are the exposures? What kind of environment this individual lived in? You know, where did they grow up? You know, has it been mold? You know, are they in a profession that they're are dealing with chemicals? You know, are they dealing with radiation? Are you, you know, like I just spoke with a cancer patient yesterday for the first time, and they're working at TSA. So they were exposed to these frequencies again and again for, you know, 15, 20 some years. And she was the only female, you know, when she started, which means that she had to be closer to a lot of these x-rays and closer to,
Yeah, it's funny because just yesterday, literally I was at Global Healing and I was talking to Dr. John there, and he said, avoid that thing that goes spinning around. He said, you can get TSA pre, and I have it. I said, I have it, but I didn't realize that I was getting radiated every time I went to that thing, because sometimes he let me just go through the metal detector. He says, no, just refuse to go through. You have TSA pre, go through the metal detector and you'll avoid radiation. Now, of course, I always think of myself as bulletproof. I never get sick, all that stuff, but I can't sit in a microwave and you know, so it's odd that you brought that up, because I just talked to John. So now I'm going to avoid that spinning thing every time I go through, because yeah, but you can imagine the guys that are running that are getting it constantly. So interesting point.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's, I mean, these are things we don't see, and just because we don't see them doesn't mean that they're not impacting us. And I call it my free massage that I get every time I go through TSA. You know, I want them to kind of dig in a little bit deeper around the shoulder area just to make sure.
Awesome. Yeah, free physical therapy.
yeah, exactly. So the beginning of understanding cancer is always you got to assess. You know, you got to understand the individual, and then based upon that, you know, we can develop a protocol, and I can kind of go through a little bit what that looks like as well, but. You know, the beginning is always you need to understand the individual. You need to understand the layers of stressors that's on that person. And interestingly enough, I mean, people always forget the importance of community, of relationships, sunshine, you know, good water. It's the basic things that are some of the best cancer preventative tools that we have.
And actually, the best adjunctive therapies, because it's funny when I hear you say those things. That's what my dad said back in the 1970s. You know, he said this exact same things, that it's a lifestyle thing. Of course, we all know about what my dad did, and we talked about it. But it's great to hear, you know, you doing it in the cutting edge right now and saying the same exact things, because it's proof. You know, that's the thing. You really feel it. So, you know, traditional oncology, especially coming from my point of view, is so much been such a negative. And so, and I don't have the right to say all traditional, everything that's cutting edge is bad, because I don't look into it enough. I just kind of assume it is. But what role do you find as a frontline practitioner that a traditional oncology plays, and what things have you seen work, or what things have you seen just don't work?
And that's the thing, is that we always, I mean, from my point of perspective, first, always do no harm. You know, right. The body is trying to utilize its vital forces to be able to resolve a problem, and we don't want to suppress that if we don't have to. It doesn't mean, and I believe, you know, anytime you start to cut into somebody, radiate into somebody, or you know, pour poison into them, that's going to suppress the body's ability to fight off any kind of disease in any shape or form. So
you find sometimes that the treatments are actually causing more harm than the disease itself, sometimes in certain cases. Yeah.
Yeah. And people get so tumor focused, you know, so they don't recognize that a tumor essentially is a huge effort for the body to encapsulate things that it doesn't want. You know, so it took a lot of effort for the body to be able to produce and encapsulate whatever's in that tumor. So we shouldn't really in the beginning start to kind of blast that thing. Yeah, it is better start to clean up the environment than, you know, in the body, and then so that the body can get to a point where it can start to break down that tumor. And then, you know, we can use tools, you know, like Leotril, and there's so many amazing tools out there. But it's essentially, we have to step away from that fear of a tumor. And we always have that, oh, it grew, you know, a couple of millimeters, or shrunk, and all these different things, and becomes your head games. While at the time, it is most important to kind of clear out the body. Does that mean that, you know, there aren't times where traditional oncology, you know, does play a role? No, it really does. So, you know, for instance, I have a patient, you know, dealing with a tumor leaning on, you know, right over their pyloric sphincter, kind of the stomach. So they're not able to eat, you know, they're not able to make extreme pain. So then at that time, it'd be good if we can find a way to shrink that to, you know, increase quality of life. And, you know, so that, or radiate, or if we have access to being able to cut it out, then we do that. But it's always kind of finding, it's not one or the other. It's finding that good integration so that individual can have the best possible outcome. Recognizing that the oncologist, they can only present their tools. So if they are saying, well, this is what we need to do in order to be able to, you know, shrink this tumor, doesn't mean that is the only thing that is out there. And that is what's so important for people to understand. And also understand, you know, why the oncologists are communicating the way that they do. It's because they only know their field, and they don't know all the other possibilities that are out there.
Yeah, absolutely agree again. So what are some of the, let's go over some of the, you know, exciting integrative therapies that you do now. And then I'd like to get into some case histories a little bit. And then I want to bring up some history from my point that I found that maybe you knew about, but I think you might find interesting. So
yeah, I'd love that. Yeah. So one of the things, and we do a lot of things. I mean, like for instance, we do, you know, vitamin B17 IVs here for our cancer patients. So they fly in here, and then they, you know, we keep them here for about 3 weeks in order to be able to get the vitamin B17 to where we want to take it. And that's extremely powerful therapy. Yeah, in addition to, you know, we do mistletoe IV, vitamin C, ozone, curcumin, EGCG, resveratrol, artisanate ozone. I mean, so we do a lot of different IV combination that depending on the individual. There's certain constants that we try to do all the time, and vitamin B17 is one of them. Probably the therapy that I'm the most known for, and that's quite unique with, you know, how we do it here in the United States, is a photodynamic therapy. And that's using the power of light to trigger, you know, cell death in cancer tissue. And the way we do that is that we prepare then the tumor tissue, and we use both intravenous and also external administration, or intratumoral administration, using then a photosensitizer that then accumulates in the tumor tissue. What happens with that is that when we expose that then to a very, you know, certain type of laser light, then it actually triggers an oxidation, starts killing then those cancer cells. So it becomes a very safe alternative to doing oxidative therapies, you know, with traditional oncology, because you are then increasing the cell death kill in the tumor just due to the photosensitizer. So it's a really, really exciting, and that's a very unique therapy that's really, really powerful that we do here.
That's incredible. And I just learned something for the first time. So as I always tell people, I don't think any one thing in the field of cancer, because it is a immune system breakdown, it is overall is how I believe that there's so many adjunctive things that work well together, and you'll see somebody that's doing something, like you said, that somebody else, it worked for somebody else, but they do it, it doesn't work. So we have to discover what that missing ingredient is. And that's great that you do all those integrative therapies. Is there some thing that you do that brings everybody to a baseline? So when somebody comes in, I know the interview process and what they're doing and things like that. Do you do any kind of testing on their nutrients or anything that kind of brings people to a baseline?
Yeah, labs become really, really important. So I do some testing techniques here, you know, when the individuals come to the center using a certain type of frequency or energy devices to identify, you know, what's going on in the body. And also something's called autonomic response testing, which is a way to assess the body through its autonomic nervous system. But prior to, I have my Zoom visit then with the new patient, and then we establish then the baseline based upon, you know, a number of different labs. And you can gain a huge amount of information just from like a regular CBC, where you can check and see like the neutrophil, lymphocyte, monocyte, and check their ratios, and that plays a huge role in where the body's at and its ability to fight cancer. You can learn a lot more about blood tests and, you know, my philosophy and the therapies that I offer in my book as well.
You know, better way to show. Do you have your book with you that you can hold up and show everybody, or?
Let me grab it here. Yeah. So this is what it looks like here. It's a short, you know, 500 pager. And larger, larger format. Yeah. It's once you start writing, you can't stop. You know,
that's right. Yeah, you get case histories or things like that.
Yeah. And then you want to, with the labs, you want to check, you know, things like C-reactive protein, fibrinogen, ferritin. You want to check and see inflammatory drivers, because no cancer exists without inflammation. You also want to check and see, you know, what are the toxic loads, you know, heavy metals, chemicals, and there are labs we can run for that. We can want to check for different pathogens, you know, mold, Lyme, different viruses, bacteria, fungus, you know, so because they are factors as well. And then we want to take a look and see genetically what's going on. And we can also then assess circulating tumor cell count, which has a lot to do with the tumor's ability then to spread its wings, so to say, over the throughout the body. And so the lower that number is, the better we are. And obviously the higher it is, the more aggressive the cancer is. And then there are also certain tests that we can check and see what are some of the genetic mutations that we can use as targets. Yeah, let's, for instance, are you overexpressing VEGF or mTOR or IGF-1 or, you know, so there are a lot of these different cancer drivers that we can then identify and then match that with natural agents to be much more effective. And when we kind of bring all this together, you know, we have a good understanding in how to kind of mold the program then for the individual.
That's a beautiful thing. So what do you see as the effect of, or, you know, people are talking about parasites. What are you seeing as far as that's concerned in your practice, and how are you specifically addressing some of that that I'm seeing, you know, in the world? I'm seeing an absolute increase in that too. And I have my own opinions about it, but I want to hear your opinions about it. What are you seeing about parasites?
Yeah, and there, some people say, well, all, you know, parasites is, you know, or parasite causes cancer. Someone says, you know, fungus causes cancer, and they, you have, you know, each one say, well, you know, this is what it is that's causing cancer. And in my mind, it's always a combination of things. And so you can't just say it's only this that causes cancer. It's kind of the addition of all these different things. So I, you know, parasites to me always play a role, and doesn't mean that it is the only thing, but it definitely can play a huge role. And it's fascinating. Some of these tumors, it could be just kind of encapsulated parasite nests. I remember one time when Dr. Dietrich Klinghardt, he's a mentor for a lot of people, especially in the people that do the technique, the autonomic response testing that I do. Yeah, I remember him talking about a lady that was driving, you know, towards him, and she was dealing with lung cancer, and so he was, you know, they're asking, what can we do? We need to do something while they're kind of driving towards him. So, you know, he used to mention, well, you know, take some ivermectin, and ivermectin is always obviously is good antiparasitical. It does a lot of number of other things as well. It has about 50 different actions. So it's not only antiparasitical, but it was interesting, this gal, you know, so she was taking the ivermectin, and all of a sudden she just started to cough up. And it was these like parasite nests that were coming out. And then she got to a hospital for the imaging, and the cancer was gone.
Wow. So. That's fascinating. Wow. That's incredible. So yeah, I've told people that you know, what my dad did back in the 70s worked then and continues to work now. However, now we have all these additional things like all the poisonous chemicals and all the glyphosate in our food and the lack of nutrients in our food. So it really has become a more involved approach, not necessarily more complicated, but more involved approach to find all the things that are going on. So tell us about.
Yeah, I remember, yeah, back in the 90s, early 90s, I had a cancer patient, and he dealing with, it was pancreatic that's gone into the liver, and yeah, and so there's a lot of kind of complications. And I essentially just put him on a few different supplements. I didn't do any IVs, didn't do any of all the kind of heroic things that we do now. And it resolved itself. You know, so it's just fascinating. It seemed to me that with the less stressors we were dealing at that time, there's less intervention that was needed. And, you know, at this time, we just need to, because they're get so complicated with all the stressors we're dealing with, we have to bring in more tools and mold things a little bit more. Still not forgetting the basic foundation, you know, like, you know, Laetril still works. Healthy living, healthy eating, healthy thinking, healthy movement, you know, all of that is still foundational. So not forgetting those. And then we can add these other tools that we brought in, you know, the last, you know, decade or two onto that.
Yeah, it seems like it gives people the best chance when you have a well-rounded approach to it. What effect do you feel diet takes on it? And I'm sure we're going to agree, but what effect do you think that diet takes on it? And what are some basic you know, building blocks of just what people are eating that you recommend when people come to you?
Yeah, I mean, diet is huge, and a lot of times it's not, obviously we talked about it, it's not always about what's in it, it's what's not in it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So we do want to really find clean sources. You know, we don't want to have accumulation of glyphosates. So, first making sure you have clean food that you're eating and that's not manipulated. And then you want to focus on that it's nutritionally dense. You know, you can't build tissue without building material. And you need also then the energy in order to be able to build that tissue and all the workers, all the enzymes, all that comes from your food. So if you, yes, it is enjoyable to eat, but you have to really focus on making sure you get the nutrients you need to build a strong, healthy body. So, and it's always important to understand you have more healthy cells than cancer cells. So you need to really focus on optimizing the health of the healthy cells. And meanwhile, recognizing that, in experiments, on little kind of cell dish, these dishes, petri dishes, they grow cancer cells using sugar.
Yeah.
So just recognize that that's what they do in labs. And if you want to be that lab in your body and grow cancer cells, then you should eat sugar. But if you not want to have cancer cells, then don't feed them.
Yeah, absolutely. True again. So tell us about some recent or some, however you want to do it. Let's talk to us about some case histories that people come to you and seen tremendous results.
Yeah, like recently I had a gentleman with esophageal cancer and we did a combination of, but it was just amazing how quickly that cancer, I mean, he couldn't really swallow or drink or, I've had a hard time speaking. So it was pretty severe, he was just excited, it's all clear, perfect. And he healed better than any doctor. The doctor was so amazed, saying that I've never seen how well and how fast you're healing and the response. And so it's talking about that integration of the different things. A gal that came with a lung cancer and was only given a few months left to live, and doing chemo would have just given her maybe kind of 25% chance of living a little bit longer. So obviously she opted not to do that type of therapy. So she did the intensive therapies that we do here, the photodynamic and all the kind of adjunct therapies. And lo and behold, after a number of months, there's no lung cancer and she's still doing great. So you have a gentleman with prostate cancer that gotten into intestinal tract and bones. The doctor essentially said, go and, learn how to become a skydiver and do whatever it is that you want to do, because you're not going to live long and we can't do much for you. And he turned all of that around and lived great for quite some time. He was elderly, but he did amazing. So it's really incredible what you can do. It doesn't mean that everything is a slam dunk. Cancer is still hard. We're all still trying to figure out, but there are so many more tools now that exist that we can have a stronger impact on cancer than we've ever had.
And what percentage, in recent years, with the whole thing with when we had this pandemic, whatever you want to think about it, what percentage of people are coming to you first instead of as a last resort? What percentage of your patients are now coming to you first, before doing the standard stuff, even if they end up doing it, how's that looking in your practice and what you're seeing?
Yeah, it is interesting. It's actually becoming more and more people are coming to me before. Usually they go through, they do all the, I mean, they have concerns, they have the lab or imaging and frequently biopsy. More and more people are opting not to do biopsy, which I feel is a good thing to opt for, unless you really, really need to have that information. The reason being is that we talked about the body's effort to encapsulate what's in there. So if you stick a needle into it, then you're opening the door. And now that's going to put a lot of stress, you know, so it's kind of like you're all of a sudden you have a jail and you do, you know, you blow a hole in one of the walls and it's going to be a jailbreak, you know. And so there are more people that are becoming aware of, you know, the concerns of a lot of the testing and treatment, and then tend to come to somebody like me first, you know. And so it's nice for these people then to have options, because more and more people have witnessed family members have gone through the traditional oncology route and just kind of seen the ravishing effect that it has on those bodies. So it is becoming more, it may be probably like 30%, I would say. I don't know. It's gone up quite a bit, actually, that they come to me first. Most commonly in the past has been that they tried doing chemo and tried all these things, which still happens. And then, you know, cancer comes back, or they are just feel so horrible they can't handle the treatment, or they're not getting the effect. Yeah, so that's quite common in the past. Still common, but more and more, you know, are coming at the first time, and I'm thrilled to bits when I get that opportunity.
Yeah, I'm hoping that as we move forward with this new administration, that we can start finding doctors like you and like start doing some statistical analysis of it, because my dad actually did that analysis on his own practice, and he found that he was only able to really give people a full life if in about 16% of the cases that had chose him last. When they chose him last, because of chemotherapy and radiation, cobalt therapy was very popular then, you know, very deadly cobalt and surgery. And my dad found that if they did all three, the survival chances were about 16% in his practice when they did the statistical analysis. But if they just did surgery, a lot of times he'd have more success. If they didn't have the chemotherapy and radiation, the percentages went up. If they just had chosen surgery to get rid of the whatever the thing was, like you said, like he had people that had it affecting their hearts or their lungs, or they couldn't breathe or they couldn't swallow. So some of those cases, he still found pretty good success, but he found the exact opposite. If people came to him as a first choice, he only lost about 16% or 15%, and he was working that up through his practice, finding other things. And so originally he thought Laetrile was like the end all to be all, the silver bullet, but he realized no, you know, pancreatic enzymes and vitamin B15 and vitamin C in the case for somebody that wasn't eating citrus ever, or you know, all these other things. So he started doing hair analysis and analysis of people's other nutrients, and he would see that his percentages were going up over time. And so it's going to be interesting to me as we come out of the shadows of being censored with all these natural answers, as we can kind of tell people, look, these are the chances comparatively, and that people can look at them. You know, this is the choice you want to make, and that's the choice you want to make. And so that's my input on that. But what are you seeing in the insurance world, like the ability or people's choices of choosing natural therapies that aren't insured, or maybe some insurances are now covering it? What are you seeing in that realm for people?
Well, I mean, we still got a long ways to go there, and the challenge. So for me, I'm a little. I know everyone wants, you know, well, insurance should cover this, and I'm not going to disagree, because a lot of people have, they are paying for their insurance and they want to be able to use it for something that actually brings health to them, mm-hmm. and that can help them. So they should have that freedom. My only concern always when insurance companies get involved is that all of a sudden they start to dictate what type of care that should be done, what is paid, and then the doctors start to then kind of push care based upon the insurance model rather than the best judgment and training from the doctor's point of view. So that is my only concern, if it steps in strongly into my world in regards to what kind of naturopathic oncology care that we offer here. But I do love the Christian health share type of programs that they are you know, essentially just saying, you know, whatever it is that the doctor feels that you need, you know, and that is reasonable, they pay for. And some of those programs are better than others, but I like that model more rather than, you know, the whole cancer industry. I think it's just a monster that needs to be changed.
Yep. It's like I said, we're equally yoked because that's my family. I have 11 children, as you know, and we're all on that program. It's I think it's Christian Share, or I can't, my wife deals with that. And the good thing is, because we follow most of the recommendations you make to somebody, a healthy patient, which is where I'd like to see a lot of our practice going, is getting people before they ever get that, like health care instead of sick care, giving people guidelines before that ever happens to live a better life. And I'm sure you do some of that, and that's where I see kind of that going. So what I wanted to kind of talk to you about and just get your thoughts about is, had you ever heard of Howard H. Beard, PhD? Okay, so you had heard about him. He was with the NIH for 30 years, and he was a huge proponent of natural treatments for disease back, you know, in the 1970s and actually far back as 1960s. And this is a little thing we found in the vault, the vault that my audience knows about, and we shared a lot with you. I hope you got to take some of that back. And I hope I got your book. If I didn't, I want to get an autographed book, because I think you're a hero, by the way. And so I want to get your autographed book. So I'll make sure that if I don't have it already, we have thousands of books, but when I've got a hero right in front of me that's written a book, I want to be able to recommend it to people and have it. And I always like the books I keep on my shelf are autographed books. But anyway, Dr. Harold Beard, and I don't know if you've heard this, and so I'll just get your opinion about it. I'm going to read this to you. It says, Laetril, composed of sodium cyanide, benzaldehyde, and glucuronic acid, when injected into the vein, is carried to the malignant tumor, and there it meets the enzyme beta glucuronidase. They pronounce it different. I always call it beta glucosidase, put there by nature, he says. And this immediately liberates the cyanide in the tumor, and this kills the tumor respiration. There is no toxicity in the patient from the Laetril, as any cyanide that might be liberated in the blood is immediately changed into thiocyanate by the enzyme rhodanase. So in over 200,000 injections, according to Dr. Burke, who was with the NIH, who was with the NIH, in over 200,000 injections, Laetril was not toxic in a single case. This substance has given back the health of over 90% of hopeless cancer victims. These reports come from the U.S. and six other countries, and he underlines in this little article that I want to get you, Laetril is the best treatment for cancer in the world you will ever know.
That's incredible. And how many years at NIH was he, did you say?
He was there for 30 years, and he was a big proponent of it, but it's covered up by history. And sadly, he died. Dr. Harold Manner, who was at the Loyola University, who I've talked to you about, my father both died in October of 1988, and then Dr. Beard died in December of 1988. And so these great heroes back then. So a lot, you know, I bring that up not to put any fear in anybody out there or anything like that, but people, you know, it's now coming back that people are understanding how important it is. And, you know, and so my audience knows that, but I just wanted to get your thoughts about how much they've covered up, you know, Laetril specifically, because we're talking about what are your thoughts about that? And I know it's something, it's not that you recently discovered it or whatever, but I think it's becoming more accepted, and doctors all over, like MDs and people, are accepting as more as an adjunctive thing that needs to be part of it. But again, it's not the silver bullet. What are your thoughts about that?
Well, I mean, it's fascinating. So here you have somebody at NIH, you know, 30 years, have given 200,000 infusions of vitamin B17 Laetril safely. Yeah, so just recognizing any governmental agency this was done at that level, and it then became almost largely unknown. So you know the amount of effort that had to be put in order to be able to squash something that was done at that level, for that amount of time. Yeah, that's a lot of money, and that is a lot of forethought to do that. And obviously, we saw what they did to your father and to other proponents of Leotril. And you wouldn't really, if you don't have an opponent that you feel is going to impact you much, you really don't care. So there must have been somebody there that cared a lot that this was not out there and available, you know, going through all these efforts. So, I mean, history just kind of points towards that, you know, somebody out there did not want this available. And, you know, there are plenty of things that are cancer causing and that's dangerous for your health that nobody is doing anything to get off the market. So it was not based upon that this was something that was dangerous. It was something that was competing, you know, against another industry that was losing money.
Very true. And so this event that you and I just shared going to, we met such fascinating people. I bumped into you. We took photographs together. It gave me great hope in the future of what we're doing. I keep going back to doctors are doing very, very well being in healthcare, getting people healthy because the referrals and the people that are coming just is the more people can know about it. I literally bumped into, and I don't know if I got to tell you this, but I bumped into a doctor in Utah who is currently doing a clinical study on Leotril when it comes to patients right now in Utah. And I had never met him before. Everybody told me I needed to meet him. And he said, oh, you're the guy, you're the, you know, the apricot seed guy. And that's how people remember me. They don't remember my name. They just remember that I'm apricot seed guy. And so I came back awestruck that this is happening. And you and I are part of this reawakening. And you are brave enough on the front line to do this. And so I want to make sure I support you in every way, you know, through this whole mission, support you in every way, getting the information I can as much as make the pipeline and getting the introductions and all these people that I'm now bumping into so that we can get to talk and get together. So another an organization that I tried to get everybody to come together was Gold Care. And I want to, if you haven't got introduced to them and your clientele hasn't got used to them, I think you'll be pleasantly surprised that the amount of synergy that you could do with an organization started by MDs and run by MDs that are all like-minded like us right now. They're literally, they are putting Leotril out there as an option, not as a silver bullet, but as another option that a good, moral, ethical doctor of any kind should be able to offer to people. And so that we can, you know, really truly make a difference. Again, this is not about me, but I'm trying to give any of my, you know, any of the people I interview this information because I don't always get a chance to tell you that face to face. So I want to make sure that. So we got a couple minutes left, Dr. Karlfeldt. What's on the horizon for you? Where are you going to be going? What are you going to be speaking about? And then how can people get a hold of you? How can they? What's the best way to get you? And do you do telemedicine? Do you do consultations over the phone? Some of that information. That's what I'd like to finish with.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes, the majority of my cancer patients, we start with telemedicine. And then if there's a need for them to come to the center for more intensive therapies, and yeah, that is then discussed and arranged. It always starts with telemedicine. I do offer for cancer patients only a free 15-minute discovery call so that they can schedule that and so they can just learn a little bit more about me. I can learn a little bit about you, you know, about them in regards to, you know, am I a good fit? Is this something that would be beneficial for the individual going through this journey? So
How do they get that? How do they schedule that 15-minute call? What's the best way for them to do that?
So there should be some links online, you know, where you go to my website, thekarlfeldtcenter.com. You can also
Karlfeldt, KARLFELDT center.com.
Yes, perfect. Okay. Yeah, don't forget the
yes,
the
exactly,
beginning.
Yeah.
You
there's
can
another
always...
Karlfeldt that we don't want you to go to. No,
no, yeah, he's horrible. Yeah. I think I'm actually the only Karlfeldt, yeah, here in
If you ever hear me mispronounce your name, please forgive me, because I got so many names coming at me, but I know you as a personal friend, but I have been guilty of mispronouncing your name. So it's important that people get the spelling right and say it. So yeah, that's how they go to thecarfeldcenter.com and they can schedule that.
And or you can call us directly, 208-338-8902, or you know, obviously on our website, we have email address if you'd rather email. So if just schedule, and I'd be happy to chat with you for a little bit and see if this is a good fit, you know, what I do. And then also I can give a little bit of input, because a lot of people have questions. Well, my oncologist says this, that, you know, it's always nice to have an additional sounding board.
Love that.
Yeah. So, I'd be happy to help in any which way. And, you know, like yourself, I do have a podcast, Integrative Cancer Solutions with Dr. Carlfeld. So you can just jump on any kind of platform and it'll be available there. Please reach out. And there's a huge amount of resources on my website in regards to different therapies that we do and cancer information. So yeah, please utilize that resource.
Awesome. And so what's on the horizon for you besides a Merry Christmas? I hope you and your family have a Merry Christmas, but what's on the horizon for you, the end of the year and the first quarter of next year? What's going on? What are you excited about?
Well, I'm excited about, we are expanding or bringing in more therapies, and it's always, you're looking at how can I be even more well-rounded. So I'm excited about, doing that, for patients. There are a number of trips, a number of conferences that they're going to speak at. That's going to be really, I enjoy, and just like yourself, I'm going to enjoy spending some time with my family during the holidays, I'm looking forward to all of that.
Awesome. So they can find out where you're speaking, the audience that's going to see this, they can find out where you're speaking by going to your website as well.
Yeah, so just sign up on my email list and you'll be able to keep track of what I'm doing, the podcast that I'm doing, a huge amount of information that we share. So please jump on there and stay in touch.
Excellent. I can't wait to see you the next time. We're going to have to compare our schedules, because I'm building my schedule. I've gotten to the point I don't even know where I'm going to be. I told you that when I showed up in Vegas, I kind of like was told, hey, you're flying to Vegas, because somebody, Dr. Marlene or somebody said you need to be there. And then I pleasantly surprised, got to run into you as well. So next year I'm going to be at that conference, but God bless you. Thank you, Dr. Michael Carlfeldt. It's been a wonderful 48 minutes to spend with you. And we're going to get this out there and we'll get you a copy of it. And it'll be up on our website, on our Rumble channel, so people can watch it over and get some more information. So God bless you. Thank you. And have a Merry Christmas.
Have a Merry Christmas. Thank you so much.